This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Tens of thousands of workers are expected to walk off the job today in a full-day strike for Black Lives. Those who can't strike the full day will leave for about 8 minutes, the same amount of time a white Minneapolis police officer held his knee on George Floyd's neck. The strike, led by labor unions and racial and social justice organizations, calls out the connection between systemic racism and systemic poverty. Reverend William Barber is president and senior lecturer at Repairers of the Breach and an organizer of North Carolina's Moral Monday movement. He's also a pastor and co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. The Poor People's Campaign is a partner organization in the strike for Black Lives. Reverend Barber, welcome back to the State of Things.
Thank you so much for having us on today.
So as we speak, workers are beginning to walk out of their jobs in Asheville, Durham, and more than 20 other cities around the country. Tell me about the primary demands for today's strike.
Well, the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, is a partner with our Strike for Black Lives, with SEIU and other unions. And just about 2 weeks ago, on June 20th, Black Lives Matter and those same unions participated with us in the mass Poor People's Assembly, a moral march on Washington, where more than 2.7 million people showed up, to say that in America we have five issues we have to address simultaneously: systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, the war economy, and the false moral narrative of religious nationalism. Today, what workers are saying is that in America we cannot ignore that there are 140 million poor and low-income people in this country. 43% of this nation will be over 50% in the midst of COVID. We cannot ignore there are 62 million persons who work for less than a living wage. We cannot ignore that poverty and the lack of wages also produce death, maybe not on a video camera, but one study says 700 people die every day from poverty, a quarter million people a year. And we know that if we went to $15 an hour, we could bring 49 million people out of poverty and low wages immediately. And we know that Black people and people of color are disproportionately represented in low-wage jobs and jobs that do not provide health care. And so what we're saying is, if you're concerned about police violence and the death that comes from those things, racialized police violence, you cannot then leave off the table if you want to deal with racism, dealing with economic injustice, and the lack of wages and poverty and those issues that exploit communities in ways that are needless today. We don't have to and can easily be changed.
You mentioned $15 an hour as a living wage and one of the demands. I'm curious what you think in terms of a broader movement to end the racial wealth gap. We saw last week the city of Asheville passed what they call community reparations, providing funding to promote home ownership and business opportunities. Do you think reparations are a good solution to end the racial wealth gap, and is that part of what you're advocating for?
Well, actually, what we're saying is that there are these interlocking injustices. You know, people try to suggest there's one thing that we do, but there's a multiplicity of things we have to do, and we should have the right to say that because, for instance, when Congress heard about the COVID, they immediately gave the corporations almost $2 trillion, and some say as high as $3, $4 trillion of money went directly to corporations rather than the people. 84% of the first three bills went to corporations, and not one of those bills has yet provided workers sick leave, unemployment, as adequate unemployment, guaranteed health care, guaranteed rent forgiveness, and moratoriums on utilities being cut off. Now, why do I say all of that? It's because the disproportionate number of people who are in so-called essential jobs that are being treated like they're expendable are people of color, poor people, and women. Reparations is an issue on the table. It has to be in a culture where one study said out of Northeastern University that if you looked at the amount of money transferred from the backs of slaves and compounded by 6% interest, it would be something like $154 trillion of lost income. So you cannot ignore the issue of reparations when it comes to Black people and slave capitalism based on slavery. You can't ignore it when it comes to our indigenous brothers and sisters who face genocide and the stealing of their land. But you also, while we're dealing with the issue of race reparations, we have to also deal with right now the issue of we have 80 million people in this country who make less, who do not have health care or are underinsured. And that means about 5,600 people are dying for every 1 million people who are uninsured. 5 million more people have lost their health insurance since COVID began. We know that 40% of the people who make $40,000 or less on jobs, 40% of those jobs will be gone. And it does not have to be this way. We could, in fact, invest. We could have a hero's bill that truly invests, not just a little bit, but truly invests in the community. So we need reparations. We need to have living wages. We need to have health care that's attached to your body and not to your job. We need to deal with the homeless crisis in this culture. And what we're saying in the strike for Black Lives, we're not going to allow this to be separated anymore. And if you're concerned about death, then we have to look at the death measurement when people are denied health care, the death measurement when people are forced into poverty and the lack of wages. All of these bad policies have death measurement. And lastly, we have to have voting rights and stop voter suppression. What voter suppression does is allows people to get elected. And once they get elected through voter suppression, they use their power to block living wages, to block reparation, to block health care, and to block the things that are needed in this community, in this country, for all people to rise from the bottom.
So you're mentioning a ton of things there, a ton of interlocking policy changes. In North Carolina, we are in a very unique situation. We're a right-to-work state. We have one of the lowest union membership rates in the country. We have not expanded Medicaid. All of those things joined together to create a very unique and specific situation in our state. Could you give me one or two very specific policy changes you would want to see in North Carolina in particular, and who you want to hold accountable for those?
Well, let me just push back just a tad, because what we're saying is not a ton of things. And I only say that respectfully. Again, when corporations when we found out about COVID, they received 3 trillion things. They received 1.5 trillion things in less than 48 hours.
Right.
It is amazing to us how we always are told with poor people and low-wage people, oh, it's too many things. The reality is the cost of inequality, according to Joseph Stiglitz, is worse than the cost of fixing inequality. So in North Carolina, we have a legislature that has blocked health care for 500,000 people in the middle of a pandemic. They could come to work tomorrow and change that in 15 minutes. We have 2 million people in North Carolina who make less than a living wage. 2 million people, 49% of the workforce. They could come to open the legislature and fix that in 15 minutes. We could be a right-to-work state, not a right-to-work state. We could be a union-welcoming state, and it would help all people, including public service workers. That could be fixed in 15 minutes. So we took us 6 years to fight voter suppression, which should have never been the case. The court said it was surgical racism. And so there are things that we could do immediately. It's not that we don't have the money. We don't have the will. That's why people are mobilizing. That's why people are striking. That's why we're mobilizing for the ballot box, because it's time for a reconstruction, a third reconstruction in America and in North Carolina and in our society. We have more than 4 million people in this state, Black, white, brown, and others, who are poor and low wealth. All of us should be troubled by that. Mm-hmm. But the disproportionate number of poor and low wealth people are Black. Now, one last thing. 61% of all African Americans are poor and low wealth. But 66 million of the 140 million poor and low wealth people are white. So Black Lives Matter, SEIU, Poor People's Campaign, is calling for this interracial gathering, coming together, because the fact of the matter is, when you have systemic poverty and systemic racism, it may be targeted at the people of color, but it ends up undermining the whole democracy. It ends up hurting everybody. And that's why we're coming together across racial lines, across class lines, across sexual lines, and all of the things that tend to divide us. And we're building and mobilizing in the streets, at the ballot box, and in the political offices of this country.
I only have about a minute left, but after today, once this strike is over, what do you want people to do? What is an action that you would like people to take? And do you feel optimistic that there is momentum for change? Just about a minute.
Take it to the ballot box. Take it to the ballot box. And what we're doing is we're saying we must do more, mobilizing, organizing. registering, educating people for the movement who vote. And what we're doing is mobilizing massively at the ballot box, but it's a little different than voting for a personality. We're voting for policy. So we're lining up these candidates and say, where do they stand on health care for all? Where do they stand on living wages for all? Where do they stand on $15 an hour plus a union? And we're looking at them through the lens of policy. We will put our weight behind those who line up with our policies the closest. They may not be perfect. We'll put our weight behind them. And then after the election, we're going to continue to push them. This is not a momentary flash in the pan. This is a moment movement calling for full reconstruction and systemic change in this culture to save the heart and soul of this democracy.
Reverend William Barber is president and senior lecturer at Repairs of the Breach and an organizer of North Carolina's Moral Monday movement, also pastor of Greenleaf Christian Church and co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, which is a partner organization in the strike for Black Lives. Reverend Barber, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Take care now. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.